Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for August the 24th in the year of our Lord, 2023. This is our one of two, and the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, to promote God, family, and country, to do so on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, we use the blueprint for liberty, the supreme law of the land, the Constitution for the United States of America as our guide. We reject revolution, of course, unless it's a Jesus revolution. Then we're in. Actually, we stand for the peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Welcome to the broadcast. I'm going to talk about the debate, but I don't want it to take center stage. I'm going to talk about Donald Trump and his opposing interview with Tucker Carlson, but again, I don't want it to suck all the oxygen out of the room. I do have a lot to talk about today. I'm going to just tell you this in 2 seconds. Vivek Ramaswamy won the debate handily. A distant second was Nikki Haley. Everybody else, in my opinion, paled in comparison. We expected Ron DeSantis to mix it up, but he didn't. He was sidelined for the most part. And Mike Pence and Chris Christie and a few of the others just sounded like a bunch of old men who have failed their country as they've been in government service forever, and they try to defend their failed records against the newcomer, Vivek Ramaswamy. Now, that's the summary of the debate. I'll get into the details as the broadcast unfolds. Yesterday, though, we talked to Lance Migliaccio and George Ballantyne, host of the Big MIG broadcast, TheBigMig.com. We talked to them in detail, and we had an incredible guest by the name of Michael Curry. And man, he has really got some barn burner information. We covered the fact that in May of 2022, Michael published what they call the Erickson Report. What do you ask? What's that? It's a matter of national security, says Michael, and boy, is he spot on. We talked about the chronic anthem, the machines are not connected to the internet, lies, but they're not total lies. They're truth. But Americans are finding out, yes, the machines are connected. But if you understand the truth, you begin to understand that they're not exactly connected to the internet. So it's kind of a clown discussion because, yes, they're connected, but no, they're not connected to the internet. So when people say, yeah, they're connected to the internet, and they're like, no, they're not. Well, both are kind of true. Let me break it down and help you understand. You know what? Engineers are discovering a nationwide cellular network. It connects election equipment and gives the federal government access to election systems at the precinct level. You don't believe me? GatewayPundit.com has the whole story. How does it all work, then, you ask? Well, wait a minute. What do you mean if they're connected but they're not connected to the internet, Sam? Well, listen to me carefully and I'll break it down. These voting machines do have modems in them. That is beyond debate. Even the mainstream admits there's modems in there. Well, just so you know, the whole purpose for a modem is to connect. Okay? If there's no connectivity or no connection made, then why do these machines have modems in them? Well, so they can connect, Sam. Okay, well, what do they connect for? Well, maybe we need to troubleshoot the modem. Can't you do that on site? Why do they need to connect and what do they connect to are the questions that we really should be asking. And if there are no connections, and you know, really there's no connections, then you don't need modems in them at all. Okay? If you don't need to connect to the network, you don't need a network connection card, right? Yeah, that's right. If you don't need to input data, you don't need a keyboard or a mouse, do you? See? Okay, this is very logical. There are modems in the machines, and they are intended to connect somewhere. The question is where? Well, the internet's the wrong answer, and that's where people have been deceived over this. Michael's information clearly documents where, who, what, how, all that. There's a company called Ericsson. They are the ones in the middle of all this. What am I talking about? Well, you got to ask the question, what is FirstNet? Well, it is separate, but I don't know what you want to call it. It is separate from the internet. The internet is public. FirstNet is private. Basically, Congress created a national cellular private network dedicated to, quote, public safety. It was hashed in the wake of 9/11. Yeah. Okay. What happened at 9/11 is congested cell networks in the public world proved to be a bottleneck for first responders. In 2012, Congress decided to go ahead and create a first net. That's not the internet, it's first net. So they created the First Responder Network Authority under the Department of Commerce to oversee the build out of FirstNet. FirstNet would serve police, firefighters, EMT services, etc. The scope was soon then expanded to include all, quote, critical infrastructure. And just days before Barack Obama left office, his administration's Department of Homeland Security, under the guise of Russian interference in the 2016 election, which turned out to be completely bogus, well, they added elections to this first net system. That's right. So we talked to Michael in great detail about this. Well, Ericsson, this company, runs FirstNet for the government. Yep, and Ericsson has direct ties to ISIS. Now, Donald Trump said that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are the founders of ISIS, and he's right about that. Well, they literally worked with a group called Ericsson and another group called Neustar. Neustar has a thing called Ultra DNS. That Ultra DNS system is how all the systems are routed. Why is it separate? Why is it Ultra DNS? Because it can deal with DNS on the internet. It can also deal with private DNS. You say, well, Sam, what the heck is DNS? Listen to me carefully. DNS is name servers. All computers deal with are numbers on the internet. Humans deal with names. The DNS system, dynamic name servers, when you make a request by name for something, sambushman.com, libertyroundtable.com, whatever, it goes and gets the number, then the number routes where you go. Well, that happens publicly, main DNS that you and I know about. It also happens privately. The public DNS sends it to a private server, then the private server routes all the traffic. That's what Ericsson and these criminals are doing. So when you say, hey, these machines are on the internet, and they say, no, they're not, they're right, they're not. But they are on FirstNet, which is equivalent to the internet, which means they are absolutely connected to the internet. And those who told you they were not are lying to you. They're not lying factually. They're technically correct, but it's a lie by misleading you because, look, they are connected. If they're not, why are there modems in voting equipment? Because they intend to be connected, and they are connected, just not to the open internet as you think. Then they say, well, that's safe. That's okay. No, it's not. It still gives government and these private sector global companies the ability to manipulate data, manipulate election results. Now, the FedNow system is kind of the last piece in this pie, ladies and gentlemen. They need to get your finances in this to have total control. As Oliver Anthony highlights it, they all want total control. So FedNow is a new service now, they claim, that will help enable financial institutions to deliver and to create end-to-end faster payment services to their customers. What does that really mean? It means that they're going to make that a legitimate, what do you want to call it, vital infrastructure, and they're going to run that through FirstNet. In other words, the question becomes then, what have they not weaponized against us yet? They have literally weaponized everything against us, folks. And that is the quintessential reality check. And so I'm just telling you, when they want you to believe that it's not connected to the internet, they're trying to but use that red herring, and they're factually right. But what they're leaving out is, yes, they are connected. Yes, they are intended to connect. And yes, they're connected to a FirstNet system separate from the internet. And where they have total control to manipulate everything. And nobody discussed it at the debate last night, really. And nobody discussed it at Donald Trump / Tucker Carlson's interview last night either. I don't know anybody in the mainstream press talking about this but Michael, Sam, Lance, and George. Others need to be talking about it because it is the, pardon the phrase, elephant in the room, or not in the room, if you will. They kind of talked about Donald last night, talking about the elephant not in the room. Well, the elephant not in the room is how we can document election integrity fraud. One is by this FirstNet connectivity issue that no one's talking about. Number two would be talking about this reality check of, hey, The FBI literally shut down stories about Hunter and Joe and promoted false stories about the Donald, creating election fraud. But the debate stage created election fraud, in my opinion, too, trying to force you to all these given rules before you can even be on the debate stage, so Donald chose not to. Well, Donald's big enough to skip the debate stage and still have, hey, a lot of coverage. In fact, the evidence now shows Donald Trump got a whole lot more viewership than the whole debate did. Yeah, Tucker and Donald together have more media prowess, authority, presence, I don't know what you want to call it, than even Fox and the other eight folks on the stage. Imagine Tucker and Donald having more views, more control via X, via what, Twitter, new media, like X or like Twitter or like Elon Musk or not, you know, it doesn't matter. The fact is that new platform, X, Musk, meaning, and Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson, they beat out Fox and all eight other candidates in terms of viewership, listenership, et cetera. Now, it's a little debatable because you got to, even if you kind of scrolled by and considered the debate or considered the Tucker Carlson interview, they're claiming that's kind of a view. The debate is what really constitutes watching in every case. That's where they play a lot of games. They say over 74 million saw Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump. How many watched the debate? Way less than that, I'll tell you that right now. All right, quick pause. Your Honest Money Report in seconds on your radio.
Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Do you know what is great about America? Ask an Immigrant. Ask an Immigrant is a new podcast dedicated to helping Americans, especially our youth, value, appreciate, and be grateful for the freedoms we have here in America. Join host Lydia Wallace Nuttall as she interviews immigrants from around the world to discover their inspiring personal stories about why they came to America. To learn more about why America is the most prosperous, greatest country in the world, download the Loving Liberty app or go to lovingliberty.net.
Matthew 24:24 teaches us that the church is deceived today. Deceived Christians call themselves Judeo-Christians. Around 1900, Jews commissioned the Scofield Reference Bible, which transformed the Jews from Christian killers to the chosen people. Here's the truth. America is in the Bible. Revelation 21. Our form of government came down from heaven. Verse 3. The many Christian ministers at the Constitutional Convention sought God's will. The God-given rights in the Constitution were ordained by God. America is the new promised land for Christian Israel, and Christians are the true chosen people. True Israel is Christian. Listen to Jesus, quote, "My sheep follow me," unquote, and, quote, "You do not believe because you are not my sheep," unquote. John 10:25-27. The beast has transformed America into the woman mystery Babylon, Revelation chapter 17. For the complete Bible study, write to Christian Knuckles, P.O. Box 210813, Royal Palm Beach, Florida 33421.
Ladies and gentlemen, your Honest Money Report in mere seconds. I interviewed Trent Staggs, currently Riverton, Utah's mayor, and he wants to go ahead and run against Mitt Romney. Oh, yeah, TrentStaggs.com to learn more. As your next Utah senator, Trent says he will champion smaller government, safer families, and a stronger economy. Yeah. Send a proven conservative and fighter to D.C. instead of Mitt Romney. Yeah. Anyway, the Federalist even highlights Trent Stagg's campaign against Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney's kind of trying to debate now if he even wants to run. Well, all I can tell you is that is amazing stuff. Brian Rust with us, RustCoinandGift.com. What do you think of the Trent Stagg's battle? I hope we can get another guy that actually is friendly and kind to Mike Lee. What do you say?
Yeah, I agree. He needs all the help he can get back there. I just hope that, you know, it's such a circus back there, and you just never know what you get. You know, they say what they want you to hear, and I just hope they'd follow through with some of the things that they continue to say.
Boy, howdy, is that critical. That a mate talked about the economy. Trent Staggs highlighting the economy when it comes to discussing with Mitt Romney and others. Ron Paul spoke out about the economy. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, let's do the Honest Money Report. Where's gold sitting, Brian?
Gold's at $1,916.50.
$1,916.50.
Right.
All right. $1,916.50. That's up a little bit.
It's up about $1,850. Sitting? Gold's up about $1,850. Silver's $2,440, up $155.
$2,440. Got it. All right. I write that down so people can kind of keep track of that a little bit week to week, by the way, folks. So check the show notes if you need more on that. What do you think, though? It's strange how it bounces around, doesn't change too much. They continue to manipulate it on paper. I think that's something that we really need to help people always remember. And these numbers that you're seeing are paper numbers. I know they're called spot or whatever you want to say, but they're really paper numbers because if you take possession, the numbers are completely different. Right, Ryan?
Correct. Yeah, they yo-yo this price around on you know, the stock exchange, so it's up and down or wherever they want. There was news, obviously, things happened in the debate. You had this BRICS thing that's happening now. They're discussing.
Yeah, we're going to get into that in detail today. All right, Kelly, what do you say? Are you in a buying mood for constitutional currency, sir?
If I can get it at a great price, yeah. But otherwise, I've already got mine put away. You know, I was buying when it was between, you know, 400, 600, and 800. So. I'm just kind of watching right now.
All right. It's pretty brutal, ladies and gentlemen, what Brian just referred to. And I'm going to try to break this down a little bit here. Several countries rallied against the dollar. Oh, yeah, they railed against the U.S. dollar, ladies and gentlemen, at what they call the Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They call it the BRICS. BRICS summit. It was in South Africa, ladies and gentlemen, and they railed against the dollar. They said, why would we use the U.S. dollar at all? Kelly, this is where they're getting more bold and they're getting united. That spells trouble, sir.
Yeah, they're getting around the SWIFT system, which the U.S. uses, and I can understand that. And yet, they don't have a currency. They're just exchanging their own currency and then selling it, you know, afterwards in the open market. And I think all of those countries have defaulted at one time or more than once on their own currency. So there's not a lot of people that take what they're doing too seriously because, you know, the other guy in the room, as bad as it is, has never defaulted and will still redeem everything that's ever been issued. So, yeah.
It'll still redeem everything that's never been issued, but it's kind of a faux default because that's not even possible. If everybody really wanted redemption, it's not doable, Brian. So in the way they claim that, in the way that's true, what Kelly's saying, that it hasn't been done, but at the same time, it's because they've created the confidence game to where people believe that no one's really called a halt to the con game. They could in a second, though, Brian.
Yeah, you're right. You know, they get together, though. I think they're getting together just so, you know, they don't want to have the finger pushed on them. They want to be able to trade and not have the U.S. eyeballing everything that's going on in their, you know, with their financial situation. So, but, yeah, I mean, you know, when they've devalued currency so often in their own countries, they don't have a lot of people don't have a lot of respect for those currencies. So, yeah. We've not ever devolved it, and we're headed for that.
Yeah, but we haven't defaulted because people haven't just called a halt and demanded payment. Otherwise, we would. We'd have to be like George and It's a Wonderful Life and go, listen, guys, come on, we're all a team here. We'd have to talk people out of their claims to keep it afloat. Right, Kelly?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they just would print more. You know what I mean?
That's right.
You know, the FDIC, everybody's like, well, my money is insured. No, there is no insurance. It's just that if something defaults, they'll just print that much currency for you. There is no insurance. You know, if everybody went in and asked to clean out their accounts right now, yeah, all the banks would be insolvent. But the odds of that happening, see, are so low. There's too many people that still are drinking, and they say the Kool-Aid, but actually it was Flavor-Aid they were drinking in Jonestown. But too many people believe even the CPI, which, you know, Mike Maloney calls the CP lie. And so many of these things, even the, you know, the paper market and the metals, is based on a lie, but there's people that still rely on that lie, you know, that we don't have inflation and we're not in a recession. They believe that because that's what the government tells them. And there's just too many people that believe what they're being told. And that's how Mitt Romney gets in there time after time, is they just, oh, he's got an R behind his name, and, you know, he's a member of the church I go to, so he's got to be a good guy. And that's the problem, you know.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This is serious, though, because what they're now doing in this big BRICS conference, or whatever you want to call it, these several countries rallying against the U.S. dollar are looking towards their own, quote, digital currency or cryptocurrency. And so if they reject the U.S. dollar, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and they really move towards a digital currency where they're kind of united globally, man, that'll be a juggernaut that'll be hard to deal with. When you look at that, those countries together, I don't even know. I'd have to total it up how many citizens they have. But it's literally over a quarter of the world, isn't it? Maybe a third of the world?
You know what it is? But those countries don't even trust each other. You think Russia trusts China? No way. You know, they're always looking over their shoulder. And so, you know,
no, but if they can temporarily unite to break the back of the United States, they may try to do it.
Right. They can do that. That's what I'm saying. They can do that. But it's a group of people, you know, that are ganging up on somebody that don't even trust that the other guy's got their back. You know, what's the Muslim saying? The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And that's what they're doing.
I agree completely with Kelly, Brian, although I think you could temporarily get along enough. You know, when you have a united enemy, even though things aren't great in your own camp, somehow that lets you set things aside. And if they did it long enough, it would still wreak havoc for the U.S. regardless, even if it wasn't a long-lasting alliance with trust and accountability. Eventually, it would break up, but it might have enough mojo to really give us trouble, though, on the home front, Brian.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that if they can lay aside, lay aside some of their own individual, you know, things that are going on and work together, because, you know, they're really kind of coming together to discuss kind of what can we do? How can we break this, you know, this petrodollar and that could have, you know, like you say, it could have a, you know, major effect as far as trade and all the other things. And I think there might be an easement as far as, you know, the finger on them. So, yeah.
Ron Paul kind of got into the debate a little bit last night without even being in it. He sent out an email, but it relates completely to the economic discussion that Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson had, along with the economy debate that the debaters had on stage last night. And here's what Ron Paul had to say. The coming collapse. And then he says, please take a moment to contact your congressmen and senators, contact your lawmakers and ask them to please audit the Fed. We've got to get this done. There is a coming collapse. Brian?
Well, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think Ron Paul's been, you know, pushing that, you know, let's get some control under this Fed. And I mean, we're 3,000% increase when the Fed took over, and you know, so in inflation. So I'd like to get a finger on the Fed as well. That'd be great.
All right, when we come back, we'll talk to Kelly, see what he has to say about this. But Ron Paul kind of getting into the economic discussion on the debate stage. Vivek doing the same. We'll talk about that too, coming up on your radio.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Lance Pry. The GOP presidential debate took place last night in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Noticeably absent was presidential candidate Donald Trump. On Tucker Carlson's X feed, Trump explains why he skipped the debate.
You see the polls have come out, and I'm leading by 50 and 60 points. And, you know, some of them are at 1 and 0 and 2. And I'm saying, do I sit there for an hour or 2 hours, whatever it's going to be, and get harassed by people that shouldn't even be running for president? Should I be doing that? And a network that isn't particularly friendly to me.
The trial of Brian Koberger, who's been accused of killing four University of Idaho students, is being delayed indefinitely. Yesterday, Koberger waived his right to a speedy trial, which allows the courts to schedule a trial more than 6 months out from his arraignment. His court date was originally scheduled for October 2nd. However, the legal team says they weren't prepared to present their case by that deadline. House Republicans may launch an investigation into the federal response to the Maui wildfires. Speaker Kevin McCarthy told reporters yesterday that he's very concerned about the response and questioned why there were so many deaths. McCarthy says he believes there's going to have to be a congressional investigation into the Biden administration's efforts. At least 115 people were killed in the wildfires. Hundreds, if not 1,000 souls remain missing. Boeing says a defect in the new 737 MAX is going to delay near-term deliveries. The plane company said yesterday that the problem involves improperly drilled holes near the rear bulkhead and may cause Boeing to miss its annual delivery target of at least 400 737s this year. So far, Boeing believes the defect is limited to a portion of its MAX 8 model. USA News.
If you have asthma, pay close attention to this message. It can save you hundreds of dollars on your healthcare costs. Right now, you can make a free call and get generic asthma inhalers for less than $20 a piece. That's cheaper than most of your insurance copays. And if you call right now, you can buy 10 or more and save even more. Our Rescue Asthma Inhalers are a real generic version of the product that you already pay hundreds of dollars for. Save yourself money and call now to order. If you have asthma, now you can save hundreds of dollars with no prescription required for your inhalers. Call right now. Learn how to get your Rescue Asthma Inhalers shipped directly to your door for less than $20 each. Call the Prescription Savings Hotline now.
800-451-0380. 800-451-0380. 800-451-0380. That's 800-451-0380. Call now.
Promoting God, family, and country. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Radio.
All right, one thing's abundantly clear. Everybody hated Vivek Ramaswamy except for Donald Trump and we the people. The people loved him. All the debate candidates on the stage can't stand the guy. Economically, they all had a debate. And sad to say, Chris Christie, Mike Pence, some of the other gentlemen on the stage sounded like just a bunch of old complainers. Oh, we've got all the experience in the world. We know what to do. Put us in place. We'll fix it. But they're the ones that broke it. They're the ones that literally have destroyed everything. Anybody who's been a politician for a long time, which is almost everybody on the stage, just trashed Mike Pence, Chris Christie, some of these other people that are kind of, and I'm calling them fringe candidates because they don't stand a prayer or have a chance. North Dakota governor, former Arkansas governor, these guys, you know, Nikki Haley was young and spry. We'll talk about that. But Vivek Ramaswamy literally ate them all for lunch. I mean, he won the debate hands down. All right, Liz, I want you to get the Vivek 2 clip. That's the one we're going to play in just a second. Here's one example of how he literally ate them alive. Listen to this.
I was born in 1985, and I grew up into a generation where we were taught to celebrate our diversity and our differences so much that we forgot all of the ways we are really just the same as Americans, bound by a common set of ideals that set this nation into motion in 1776. And this is our moment to revive those common ideals. God is real. There are two genders. fossil fuels are a requirement for human prosperity. Reverse racism is racism. An open border is not a border. Parents determine the education of their children. The nuclear family is the greatest form of governance known to man. Capitalism lifts us up from poverty. There are three branches of government, not four. And the U.S. Constitution, it is the strongest guarantor of freedom in human history. That is what won us the American Revolution. That is what will win us the revolution of 2024. Thanks for letting me introduce myself tonight. Thank you.
What do you say to that, Kelly?
He's the real deal. I mean, everything he says is so pro-American, and he's the only guy that's really not afraid to get up there and tell it like it is. The only one. And people like that.
I think you're right about that. Yeah, people like it, but you know what? The debate folks could not stand him. Okay, this guy came out of nowhere, and everybody's attacking him. Trump trolled the debates and praised Vivek, because Vivek was the only one that stood with Donald Trump.
They're attacking him.
Here's my headline for this. Vivek sets the record straight, Kelly.
Yeah, I mean, they're attacking him because they're afraid of him. You know, like they say, when they start targeting you, that means, you know, when the flak's the heaviest, that means you're over the target. And so he scares everybody because he's saying what people want. Not what they want to hear, really, but they do, but what they really, really want. And you can deal with a guy like that.
Everybody hates Vivek except for the people and Donald Trump, Brian.
Yeah, I that was a great, you know, statement. He got up there and just said it how it was, and that's, you know, no doubt about it. We need more of that, and he would be, you know, great to have in some kind of position there where he could really, make an impact. And I think that's, like Kelly said, they're going to attack him just simply because, oh, you can't say that. You can't. Oh, you can't. You're going to hurt. You can't. Come on. Get out there and say it. I mean, look, why are they attacking Trump? Because they're afraid of him as well. I agree.
Well, I find this interesting. He brought up there was a lot of discussion about the economy. And really, the attacks were about Bidenomics. And all these other guys are like, you know, trust the Republicans, not the Democrats' idea. Which, again, you know, as well as I do, this is a waste of time. Democrat plan versus Republican plan. We get nowhere. Pence tried to defend his out-of-control spending. And Vivek just mocked him at it. I mean, this guy literally spent us into oblivion. What I found fascinating is in that one statement that Vivek had, he said so many things. Two of them related to the economy. One of them is he says, listen, we must have fossil fuels to thrive economically speaking. Period. End of discussion. Brian, he's right. And every one of them knows it.
That's exactly right. Well, and we're seeing the effects of throughout the world. I mean, countries that decided to go away from that and now are coming back to that. And I mean, yeah, I mean, we have to have that. And this agenda, this left agenda saying, you know, we need all just battery driven vehicles and, you know, ride the train or it just doesn't work.
Now, he was the only one that had the guts to back that up. He said climate change is a hoax.
Yeah.
And all the insiders on the stage just literally had a conniption, Kelly.
Oh yeah, they can't stand that. And the hoax of it is trying to blame it on people, you know, because we're such a small part of what really causes anything to change. And this world changed from, you know, they'd like to go back. This is the hot, you know, July 4th was the hottest day ever. Really? Was there somebody around 100,000 years ago measuring the temperature on what would have been the July 4th? I don't think so. So it wasn't. So they found out that really they only go back to 1979. So it was the hottest July 4th since 1979. Oh, well, that's not very long, is it?
But that even if their data collecting, that's even if their data collecting was accurate all the time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then you relied on probably somebody looking at a thermometer. you know?
Because I'm saying we can't even depend on these guys telling us if it's going to rain today or not. How are they going to go ahead and project the future if they can't even tell me if it's going to really rain today or not?
Yeah, if you can't even give me a week, then how are you, you know, even at 100 years? And so,
I mean, they literally tell me a 15% chance of rain today, and then it's raining while I'm reading the report, kind of thing. Brian?
Yeah.
And then they all left and got on their little Lear jets and flew back home and then to get on their jet again and fly 2 miles down the street so they can have another meeting. Yeah, I don't buy it.
I find that fascinating. While Vivek had the guts to say climate change is a hoax, the only one that really doubled down in defense of climate change was Nikki Haley, who did pretty well in the debate on a lot of topics, by the way, but she sold herself south on that one. She literally blatantly said climate change is real. Do you want to respond to that, Kelly?
Well, it is. It's summer, so it is hot. So I guess she is right. You know, it's summer still for almost like another month, and then it starts to be fall, and it'll start getting cooler. And I think I can predict that. Temperatures a month from today will be cooler than they are right now. How's that for being a climate prognosticator?
Yeah, you got it.
I don't even know how to handle this discussion, though. If we can't even debate if something's real or not. You see, I believe that the Earth is getting more climate turmoil. I mean, God told us we would if we disobey him, that, you know what, there'll be all kinds of catastrophes and things. The hoax part is where we believe that, hey, humans are the problem and government's got to control the humans. That's where the lies begin, and the government has to engineer the outcome to protect us from ourselves. That's where the lies begin, et cetera. And these people on the stage just couldn't deal with the fact that it's a hoax, deal with the fact that it's a lie. And he basically said, hey, it's putting a wet blanket on the economy, this climate change thing, to the point where economically that's our biggest problem. And so then he doubled down and he said, look, we need to drill, we need to frack, we need to do all things that relate to prosperity, and we need to do it now if we want to change the economy. No one had the guts to even agree with that. That used to be the talking point for the Republicans. Now they've all backed away from that except for Vivek. Brian?
Yeah, well, that's because they're a joke, if you ask me. But yeah, it's affecting the economy, sure, but that's because more government. Let's just keep adding more government, because that's going to help. They can just take care of us, and it's going to be a good thing. Well, it hasn't really been a good thing. And then you got a president that come in here and absolutely destroyed anything that was good before. You know, our resources were independent. We didn't have to rely on Russia or anybody else to get us oil. So it's the writing's on the wall. I mean, we can see the truth, you know, but yet we better bring in more government to help us, you know. Let's print more dollars, and let's all wear a mask, because, you know, this COVID thing's just around the corner again. COVID-14 is right there. So I mean, we scare us another little bit. And yeah,
Kelly.
I was just going to say really quick that he's the only one that's got the cojones to stand up there and really tell it like it is. Everybody else has to bow to the narrative, and he doesn't, you know. He actually goes against ESG with his investment.
There you have it. Hang tight, ladies and gentlemen. I am Sam Bush with Brian Russ, Kelly Finnegan with me on your radio.
The spirit of the American West is live and well in Range Magazine, the award-winning quarterly devoted to the issues affecting the American West. Each issue contains informative articles, breathtaking imagery, as well as the culture of cowboy spirit today, and gift ideas like the 2021 Real Buckaroo Calendar. Order online from rangemagazine.com. Loving Liberty Network salutes the spirit of the American West at rangemagazine.com.
Decades after Jimmy Carter, Joe Biden picked up where he left off. With America surrendering to terrorists, Biden's foolish spending is causing inflation, which means more pain at the pump, higher prices on groceries, devaluing your retirement savings when you need it most. Once was a mistake. Twice is a disaster. America needs strong leaders, not weak ones. Save America JFC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
In the medical field, IT security is crucial. Our highly skilled consultants are HIPAA certified and have 20 plus years of experience servicing medical clinics, billing and supply companies. We offer comprehensive endpoint protection, guarding your computers and servers against all stages of threats. And with our 24/7 monitoring services, you'll never worry about extensive downtime again. Ready to level up your IT support? Call 801-706-6980 today and discover how great IT services can be with Managed IT Services.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
Begging politicians, bureaucrats, and educrats, and all do-gooders to please obey the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. This is Liberty Roundtable.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Kelly, what do you say? I mean, really, he doubled down and said, look, this environmental stuff is a hoax. We cannot have the government control everything and create a wet blanket on the economy. We have got to have fracking, drilling, doing everything that we need to do for Americans to prosper. Americans cannot prosper and have our normal way of life and cannot advance society without fossil fuels. This is something nobody else on the stage will say, but I will. I think he couldn't be more spot on. No one had the guts to even agree with him, but that used to be the general standard point of the Republicans. Now they've all jettisoned it, except for Vivek Ramaswamy, Kelly.
Yeah, they're afraid, you know, they're afraid of the narrative that's out there, you know, and these carbon credits, what a joke. All it does is just make you pay more for stuff. It doesn't change anything. Still putting out the same amount of carbon dioxide, which isn't the biggest greenhouse gas in the world. It's actually water, but they have to take that out because, you know, that water is everywhere. But yeah, it's good that he's the only one willing to do that. And confront it head on. And you know what? If somebody disagrees with him, he'll debate him, and he'll tear him down. They're afraid.
And you know what? They all basically came back on this point. Every single one of them. It was a disgrace. Every single one of them says, "Oh, you don't have experience. You don't know what you're talking about. You're too young," says Mike Pence. "You don't have experience on foreign policy, and it shows," says Nikki Haley. Everyone literally trashed him for lack of experience, and my response is twofold on that. Number one, I don't know that it's a problem to be young. He's a billionaire. He's an attorney. He's got 20 years in the private public sector in business. As a billionaire in business with immigrant parents, I don't know how much more experience you need. If we're talking experience, these experienced folks have us $32 trillion in debt. If that is what experience buys you, Brian, I don't want any part of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. And he's kind of like a mini Trump in a sense. I don't, maybe that's not the good way to put it, but that, you know, Trump, a billionaire, has experience in the business field. And that's exactly what he did. He went in and he's not a politician, so he didn't dance with all the, you know, little agendas and made mistakes putting people there. In fact, one of the mistakes I would have to say is Pence, because Pence, here's a guy that should have had his back and supported him, but he's afraid of the narrative, like Kelly says, on the other side. So he can't say anything good about Trump because that's going to hurt him in his campaign. Well, it's already hurt him for standing up and some of the things that he has said in the past, but now they're going to attack this young guy and on the same agenda. And they say
it's
experience.
Well,
how well is their experience been? We're seeing the fruits of their labors, and it's not a good thing. And so,
yeah, it's not a good look. The American people are suffering. We're $32 trillion in debt. If you talk about unfunded liabilities, it's more like a couple of hundred trillion. We're literally on the brink of war. We're in over 130 nations, militarily speaking. None of the government works. Government or views by the American people about government, Congress, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, at an all-time low. I mean, this is disaster. Now, Vivek also was the only one to be decent to Donald Trump on the stage, which I found fascinating as well. Let's do Vivek soundbite one, Liz.
Let's just speak the truth, okay? President Trump, I believe, was the best president of the 21st century. It's a fact. And Chris Christie, honest to God, your claim that Donald Trump is motivated by vengeance and grievance would be a lot more credible if your entire campaign were not based on vengeance and grievance against one man. And if people at home want to see a bunch of people blindly bashing Donald Trump without an iota of vision for this country, they could just change the channel to MSNBC right now. But I'm not running for president of MSNBC. I am running for president of the United States. We're skating on thin ice, and we cannot set a precedent where the party in power uses police force to indict its political opponents. It is wrong. We have to end the weaponization of justice in this country.
The crowd loves it. Everybody loves Vivek. What he said was spot on. He slammed grumpy old Chris Christie at the same time as he made those vital points. Look, we cannot weaponize the opposite side of the discussion. Whether you like or disagree with Donald, whether you believe he's committed crimes or not, isn't important. You cannot weaponize against a candidate and or a former president of the United States. And that's what Vivek's primarily saying, look, folks, you can't do that. Donald Trump was the best president in the 21st century. You know what? Donald's got his flaws. I'll be the first to tell you. But I have to agree with him, Kelly.
Yeah, you know, and I'll play on his Indian culture. He's a cobra, and he doesn't dance to the flute. You keep poking him with a stick, and he'll come right back at you and get you. And he's tough, and he's smart. He knows what to say and how to say it, and he doesn't get provoked. So I think this might be their wake-up call that maybe we should be poking sticks at Vivek. I love him. I think the guy's great. You know, if you put him and Robert Kennedy together, holy crap, nothing would stop that.
Oh, yeah, or even him and Donald Trump together for that matter. But I'll tell you what I find also interesting. Believe it or not, I never thought I'd see this day. But I agree with CNN. Can you believe that, gentlemen? I agree with CNN. Here's what CNN had to say after the debate. Quote, a CNN panel praised Republican presidential candidates Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley. Now, I don't give Nikki a lot of praise. She was a distant second big time. But you know what? I got to admit, CNN had a point. Vivek slaughtered them in this debate, folks. Truly, truly ate them alive. Now, I think I have a Christie soundbite. Let's play this one. Christie and Mike Pence, all those guys sounded like just a bunch of old men stuck on stupid. Listen to Christie.
Tonight, of a guy who sounds like ChatGPT standing up here. And the last person in one of these debates, Brett, who stood in the middle of the stage and said, what's a skinny guy with an odd last name doing up here, was Barack Obama. And I'm afraid we're dealing with the same type of amateur.
Wow.
Yeah.
Vivek sounds like ChatGPT. No, it sounds like he knows what he's talking about. Number one, I don't know that ChatGPT has anything to do with it, but they're making it try to act like he's a robot or something else. And my response is the old school are the robots. They're the ones that have been the gatekeepers and game players. But Chris Christie just sounded like an old man. Then he mocks him, trying to compare him to Obama. Well, just so you know, Obama became president, like or hate him. Is that the omen that Chris Christie means to say that, hey, Vivek's going to win? Is that what he really said, Brian?
I think that's what he was saying. Sounded kind of like Bernie Sanders there. I couldn't quite, was it him or not? I couldn't see a picture. But, yeah, old sounds like kind of an old man and didn't get any, I think the people were kind of booing him. So that, how well did that go for him?
The people were booing him. Look, when you start comparing another guy on the stage that's a billionaire businessman, attorney, who's schooling everyone on the debate stage, and then you say, sounds like ChatGPT. Who is this skinny guy? Sounds like Obama. I don't mean to be rude, but you're looking like you're such an old, scared man on the stage. Everybody on the stage just had to wither because Christie made such a foolish statement that it let Vivek shine without even responding to that,
well,
Kelly.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, I think the first rule of debating is no ad hominem, which means personal attacks. And that sounded more like a personal attack rather than debating the topics. So that just tells you, you know, that he's the guy. He's the front runner, you know. And Trump's smart. Trump's like being Notre Dame. I don't need to join any conference because I get all the revenue. So I get why he's not there. And Vivek's the...
By the way, you mentioned that Chris Christie was booed. He was booed so many times and booed so bad that the moderator, Brett Baer, had to intervene and say, talk to the crowd and say, look, you've got to stop. We've got to have a civil debate here. The crowd was so against Christie that the moderator had to protect the poor old man.
There you go.
What do you say to that, Kelly? That's really unprecedented, if you ask me.
I would have just said, hey, if you guys don't shut up, Chris is going to come and sit on your lap, you know, and that would make me.
Oh, man, leave it to Kelly, Brian.
I know, he's good.
Christie was literally booed to the point where the moderator literally had to intervene on Chris Christie's behalf. It was that bad. I just can't believe it. And so I just find the whole thing interesting. But talking about the economy a little bit more, think about the things that Vivek said about restoring the economy. Imagine if we got rid of all the climate change regulations and we were actually able to drill and frack. And imagine if we jettisoned climate change, the hoax, and got rid of the wet blanket of the economy. Just imagine. That's partially what Donald did. Imagine somebody coming in after Donald or along with Donald and turning that on steroids, Kelly.
Yeah, that's exactly right, you know. And then you got the Oliver Anthony coming out with the song about, you know, the rich men north of Richmond. And people are just getting tired of this and realizing it doesn't matter which side they're on. It's an us versus them. And them, they don't care. You know, they're going to take turns like a tennis match on which side the ball's on, Democrat or Republican. So I think Vivek's the only one that's really talking about what matters to people rather than what matters to the candidates to get in.
Now, the last statement is Burgess Owens, congressman of Utah, just endorsed Donald Trump for 2024. I don't know what'll happen. I don't know if Vivek will be the VP pick for Donald. He praised him on the stage, and Donald literally trolled the debate and thanked him publicly just over the last several hours. So you're starting to see kind of an interesting change in the game. Now everybody's against the Donald and Vivek. But Donald and Vivek take all the oxygen out of the room between the two of them, big time. Last word to you, Brian.
Yeah, I think, you know, the last words for me, it's interesting kind of all this circus that's going on, and Donald doesn't need to be there. One thing I'd like to say before we close is I think everybody needs to go listen to Michael. I know I'm changing the subject, but pull up Michael Corey news and get an eye full of that.
Yeah, so listen to yesterday's 2 hours is the point, right, yeah, Ryan?
Absolutely. And he said it's 100% fact. I'm not giving you stuff that's not 100% fact that I've stand behind. So that's important right there.
There you have it. Kelly, I think the show about Michael yesterday, basically they're saying, look, computers are connected to the internet. That's what's causing all the problems. And the mainstream says, no, they're not. Well, they're not, because they're actually connected through AT&T to a system called FirstNet that the government built after 9/11. And now they're working with Ericsson Electronics and this Ultra DNS service to route traffic and commit election fraud on what's called FirstNet, not on the internet. And Michael broke that news on Liberty Roundtable Live yesterday and provided details. All you got to do is follow the dots, follow the money. It's provable. Where's the accountability was the only question left. Well, gentlemen, we're out of time. Thank you so much, Kelly. Thank you so much, Brian. If you want an honest friend in the constitutional currency business or the gold and silver business or the coin business, all you got to do is get a hold of RustCoinAndGift.com. That's RustCoinAndGift.com. Thank you, gentlemen. God save
Thanks,
the
Sam.
Republic of the United States of America.
broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for August 24th in the year of our Lord, 2023. This is Hour 2 at 2, and the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, to promote God, family, and country, to do so on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen, we reject revolution, unless it's a Jesus revolution, then we're in. Actually, we believe we can restore the republic peacefully through a restoration process, ladies and gentlemen. We can peacefully restore the republic. By the way, just in case you're wondering, it's my humble opinion that hands down, Vivek Ramaswamy and Nikki Haley won the debate big time. The rest were completely sidelined, kind of irrelevant. Most of them were just old men on the stage, all grumpy and whatever. Nikki had a good showing, even though I don't agree with her on a lot of things. But hands down, Vivek Ramaswamy stole the show. There's no debating it. But I don't want to get into the details of the debate right this second. I want to talk about the economy. I want to talk about China. I want to talk about climate change, but all in an economic reality framework. Pete Sepp with me, president of the National Taxpayers Union. The NTU is the voice of American taxpayers, mobilizing elected officials and citizens on behalf of tax reform. Imagine that. NTU.org. Pete Sepp, welcome back, sir.
Great to be here.
All right, let's talk about the debate and a few things of interest here. Number one, in the debate, everybody had a lot of things to say about the economy. They talked about China. They talked about climate change, mostly in relation to the economy. And here's what Vivek said. He said, hey, look, climate change is a hoax. He said, look, economically speaking, this climate change has been used to put a wet blanket over the economy. And what we need to do is get rid of that wet blanket of climate change. We need to frack. We need to drill. We need to do all things that create prosperity. In fact, you cannot have prosperity if you don't have fossil fuel. And he basically made the point. Everybody was against him on it. The people love him. Donald loves him. But it seems like the rest of the debate stage hated him. I don't want to drag you into that discussion, but I do want to focus on the points that he made economically speaking, sir.
Yeah, it is important to focus on that because behind the scenes, you would think just watching Congress that nothing is happening on climate change policy at all. But if you look at the executive branch, the rulemakings that are being issued by the Environmental Protection Agency, by Department of Energy, by Department of Transportation, all of these federal agencies are getting into climate change policies that are going to cost taxpayers dearly. Many of your listeners may remember the Clean Power Plan proposed by Barack Obama and his administration. Fortunately, major elements of that were blocked, not only by court action, but also by Congress itself saying, slow down here. We can't just instantly flip the equivalent of a light switch, to use a power analogy, and say, yay, we're going to use nothing but wind and solar power to produce all of our electricity. Well, the Barack Obama administration was a good 10 years ago now, longer than that, actually, and some of the same problems are still in place. We can't suddenly mandate by law or by regulation that a certain percentage of our electricity is going to get generated from non-fossil fuel sources, and it happens. Unfortunately, if you do that, you also drag along with you higher taxes, more government subsidies, draconian regulations that limit people's freedom, and in the process limit economic development. I think that was a point that Ramaswamy was trying to make in the limited period of time he had. And we have got to watch what's going on in this current administration to see how taxpayers are endangered. That Clean Power Plan rule that Obama had is back now in a different form. And they are setting goals such as within 10 to 20 years, there's going to be a massive shift in how we get our electricity in this country. I'm here to say, unless markets evolve at the pace that is best suited to the American people and the technological capacity, we are going to see big government in a way we never have, putting its hand on the scales and putting its foot on our backs.
Let's talk about Congress, because you mentioned a bunch of agencies in the executive branch doubling down on all this, quote, rulemaking or mandates and everything else, but that isn't law. What is Congress saying about this? Is Congress going to really rein this in? What are the talks behind the scenes about this, Pete? Because, look, I'm not here to debate whether it's good or bad at this point. I'm here to debate who has the authority and how it will actually go down in the real world, right?
Yes, yes. Well, of course, there is the third branch of government, the judiciary, where a lot of this could play out. You could see many lawsuits from members of Congress, from the private sector, saying, yeah, the government doesn't have that authority. In fact, there's a major case before the Supreme Court right now about what's called Chevron deference. That's a doctrine that was established a couple of decades ago by the courts to say, well, if Congress passes a law and a federal agency implements it, and there were major parts of the law Congress passed that were kind of vague or left up to the regulatory agencies, then we have to have deference to the executive branch in implementing that law. Well, lo and behold, given that kind of latitude, agencies have gone wild. And the current case before the Supreme Court now, Loper-Bright, as it's called, it involves Department of Commerce regulations and their authority over fishing. But the whole Chevron deference doctrine is on the line right now. And we're hoping, and in fact, our organization is filing a friend of a court brief in the case, that it's going to be clarified and dramatically scaled back so that agencies no longer overexert their authority. But we're not necessarily going to see a decision on that for a while, and the decision may not turn out the way we like. So we're going to have to make sure Congress is also pushing back through things like votes on these rules to repeal them under the Congressional Review Act. The House of Representatives, controlled by Republicans, will certainly do that. What would happen in the Senate? Well, that's going to be a lot more difficult, getting conservative and moderate Democrats to come along with Republicans in the upper chamber. That's where the challenge is going to be.
They talked some about the environment, and I wanted to highlight that because, look, you know, agree or disagree on the debate of climate change, the fact is we've got to have the proper bodies in government making the laws, and the legislative body needs to jealously guard their responsibilities. I agree that the courts can play a role in terms of interpretation, etc., but Congress has a responsibility to get it right, and if things are way off the rails, just waiting for the court to do their deal isn't the right answer. The right answer is to come back and say, look, this is the law, this is what we mean. Don't play games and try to create law from downstream administrative offices pretending that somehow you have legislative authority under the guise of some of these other things. So that's where I would say Congress needs to speak out, and hopefully they will on much of this. But they also talked about China being a great threat. And I don't want to get into the debate about, you know, the communists and all that, except to say right this minute, you know, they're saying, hey, this is a threat economically speaking. It's a serious problem. For example, at the same time they're having this debate saying China is the big threat, which I agree that it is, but several countries rallied against the United States dollar just yesterday at what they call the Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. They call it the BRICS Summit in South Africa. They all basically said, look, we want to jettison the dollar here. We're sick of the dollar. We're sick of Americans trying to take control of everything, and we want to do something different. So they're talking about using other currencies and or a digital currency that would circumvent the dollar. That's real, Pete.
Yes, and that's a direct consequence of our economic policy as well as our weak fiscal policy. The years of overspending among Republicans and Democrats, the lack of ingenuity when it comes to competing with countries like China, instead of trying to emulate China, which subsidizes fake industries. Basically, they're government run, and they pour lots of resources into competing with our private industries. One of the responses was this CHIPS Act. Well, let's pour a lot of tax dollars into subsidizing manufacturing here. Well, here's a better idea. How about we keep taxes and regulations low so that these companies can do it on their own? That is the smart path. And yet, on that debate stage, you had plenty of Republicans basically saying, well, there's not much we can do to compete with China except emulate them. I think that's absolutely wrong.
All right, there you have it. I think that's critical, and it is a direct result. And I think the answer is for Americans to reduce our spending, to get a handle on things, to bring in more than we spend. The answer is to realize that, you know what, it's not a political discussion here, ladies and gentlemen. It's not a left-right thing. It is an American thing to say, let's live within our means and show the world that we have taken responsibility. Let's show the next generations, our children, that we are responsible, not only individually, but as a country. Hey, skip the break for me, will you? Pete Sepp with me. He's with NTU.org, the president thereof, if you will. Ron Paul was not in the debate last night, but he issued an email that I find relevant also, Pete. He says this, headline, The Coming Collapse. Please take a moment today to contact your lawmakers and demand that they pass our bill to audit the Federal Reserve. In other words, Ron's point is we've got to have accountability, and it starts with our money and accountability for our money. What do you say to Ron?
Absolutely, we should. And coming back to the BRICS conference you mentioned, Sam, this is directly relevant to the policy challenges we are facing right now. If the United States is to remain an economic leader and competitive with countries like China and eventually India, we need not only a solid currency, we need a central bank that's going to be accountable much more so to Congress and the American people than it currently is. We need to know as well some daylight into the inner workings of the Federal Reserve, because I'll tell you, the Fed creates these windows, for example, that's the parlance in the financial world, whenever there's a massive economic crisis, opening the floodgates where it buys up huge chunks of United States government debt to try to stabilize the economy. Well, what kind of capacity does the Fed have to do that in the future? What happens when the next borrowing crisis hits us? And the fact that we've been downgraded again with our sovereign credit rating by one of the rating agencies, Fitch, that brings it into much nearer focus about who and what tools are available if the next crisis hits. And auditing the Fed is a good place to begin that discussion.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is serious. When these countries get together in BRICS and then the U.S. credit rating downgraded is an ominous sign for taxpayers. There's an article about that at NTU.org, by the way, if you want to check out that incredible article written by Andrew Wilford, Pete.
Yes, indeed. This is all about many of the most important aspects of tariffs, of overspending on the part of the federal government, of currency control, of the fact that China is an owner of a large chunk of the U.S. government's debt. Sure, there are many other countries involved, United Kingdom, Germany, others, but eventually, no matter who owns U.S. government debt, there will be a capacity point among countries and their willingness to buy up our debt. And that reckoning is coming very, very soon. It's not being a doomsday person or a prepper to say, oh, start digging a hole, folks. Actually, it's a call to action for folks to say, listen, we don't want the United States relegated to second power status permanently And we are running out of time with the confluence of entitlement programs, Social Security and Medicare, and their so-called trust funds running out pretty rapidly. We're within a 10 to 12 year window on several of those programs of them going belly up and making massive tax increases or massive benefit cuts a near reality. Those things need to be addressed. And I have to say, you heard very little about the Social Security and Medicare crisis on the debate stage last night. I seem to recall just Mike Pence actually speaking up about it in detail.
All right, there's a lot to discuss and not enough time with Pete to discuss it all. But NTU's Pete Sepp on your radio now discussing tech policy legal battles. This is an important issue, too, that no one talked about during the debate. You kind of wonder why. This is critical right now, Pete.
Yes, it certainly is. Nobody likes big tech 100% of the time. You know, granted, there's something that one of these platforms does in your daily business or your personal life that ticks you off, and rightfully so. Unfortunately, that is a miscue for some politicians to say, you know what, let's really regulate these firms into the ground. We can't do anything about TikTok or any of the other foreign competitors, so let's beat up on our own tech companies. And that's all too often what happens in the United States. The Department of Justice, the Federal Trade Commission are constantly suing tech companies, really at the behest of other tech companies who feel that somehow they're not getting as good a deal for advertising online, or that their search results are not being properly prioritized. And so the government does the bidding of disgruntled competitors, and suddenly you have a situation where the FTC and the DOJ are suing companies all across the economy, not because they're gouging consumers or failing to protect their privacy, but because there's not enough well-defined competition. And the competition is, again, something that angry competitors are saying is not existing. The consumer's welfare is just fine. It's just the pocketbooks of some companies are a little thinner than others, and they want to bring in the government on their side to harass those better off companies. That's a very dangerous situation, especially in the hands of someone like the FTC's chairman, Lina Khan, who effectively believes that major portions of the economy should be controlled from Washington, D.C. We need less of that, not more of that. And you're right, Sam, I didn't hear much about that at all on the debate stage last night.
Sadly, those are the things that should have been covered, in my humble opinion, ladies and gentlemen, because they're most critical to we, the American people, lowering taxes, living within our means, finding ways to deal with inflation appropriately. That's really what should have been discussed, tech policy and how they're gaining way too much power, way too much control. But another topic I found interesting, they mentioned it, but they didn't dig in like they should have. The term is called Bidenomics. And NTU's Brandon Arnold discusses Bidenomics on a bunch of different broadcasts. They should have drilled in a little bit more. They kind of sideswiped Joe Biden and said, oh, Bidenomics are hireable. But they didn't really dig into anything that mattered like you guys do, Pete.
Yes. Some of the real problems when you dig right down into Bidenomics have to do with pro-inflationary versus anti-inflationary policies, price controls, which were a fantasy back when Republican Richard Nixon proposed them. He even admitted it in private conversations. You have wage controls and the opposite, wage inflation, that federal policies try to manipulate. No good. You know, those are the kinds of things that we could have asked in sequence of all of the candidates, maybe five questions. What's the ideal personal and corporate tax rate total at the federal level in this country, and how would you get to it? A second question would be, how would you roll back all of the price controls and restrictions that the Biden administration and others have imposed over the years. What specifically would you begin rolling back in terms of excessive federal spending, considering that several people on that stage voted for trillions of dollars in additional federal spending? Where would they start the cutting? You know, those are the kinds of specific questions those folks need to start answering, rather than, well, Bidenomics has been a disaster for the middle class. We know that. How do we get from disaster to recovery? And NTU has been
answered most of them by saying he would abolish a ton of government agencies, and they kind of mocked him for it and said, "Oh, it's your lack of experience. You don't have a clue, Vivek." But my response to them is their experience got us $32 trillion in debt. And their experience got us in a couple of $100 trillion in debt when it comes to unfunded liabilities. So I'm not sure that I like their experience if we're going to play games with experience. This guy is a self-made billionaire. I think he has a little bit of experience there. Let's not discount it at all. Their experience has led us off of a cliff like lemmings. And so I don't mean to just defend Vivek as a person per se, but I am saying at least he's got an idea that says, hey, let's go ahead and increase drilling and do all these environmental things that we got to have it to build the economy. Let's go ahead and get rid of all these government agencies and save a bunch of money. I mean, at least that's a start and a solution-oriented position to take, rather than, oh, man, Bidenomics are bad and just put me in charge and I'll fix it. Well, those are the old men that have broke it.
Yes, that's exactly right, Sam. And to those folks on the stage who were mocking that, I would say, listen, these were once friendly parlor discussions about what would you get rid of in government if you were president. Well, the parlor discussions are over. We are either going to have this conversation forced on us at the worst possible time. You and I have talked about this with Social Security. If we don't plan on reforms right now, in 8 to 10 years from now, there's going to be a 30% increase in taxes or a 30% cut in benefits. Which do we want to do? Have a thoughtful conversation about which federal agencies are serving a useful purpose, which aren't. How do we restructure the federal government rationally? Are we going to do that? Or are we going to wait for a default on our national debt or all the credit rate agencies downgrading us and then have it forced on us? Which choice are we going to make?
When you just yell somebody doesn't have experience, we do and you don't, but their record betrays them, they're out of arguments, Pete.
Yes. Yes, they are. And I don't think it's wrong at all to say, how about we evaluate all of these programs in the federal government, figure out which ones are working, which ones aren't, start paring back. You know, Texas, a very large state with a very sophisticated government, does this on a systematic basis. They call it the Sunset Commission, which reviews all of the programs at the state level in Texas on a periodic basis, evaluates them by a number of metrics, makes recommendations to the legislature for defunding or cutting funding, eliminating entirely, scaling back, whatever. But they have a process in place like that. Why not start with something like that at the federal level? It's not a crazy idea.
It's not, ladies and gentlemen. If you want people who are rational, reasonable, and who literally provide think tank behind the scenes reports and intelligence that drill into this, all you got to do is go to NTU.org. Pete, I know we were supposed to let you go at 30. I'm hoping you got a couple of more minutes. What I want to do is rate the congressman really quick according to the NTU scorecard. Those on the stage talking about the economy, we can see where they really stand, with a couple of exceptions. For example, Vivek isn't there, but he's so bold in what he says he would do. If he does half of it, it would make a tremendous difference. And if you can stay with me, though, I want to come back and break that down, and I'll let you go as quick as I can. Can you do that?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
All right, stay there, ladies and gentlemen. Liberty Roundtable Live on your favorite talk station with Pete Sepp from NTU.org.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Yeah.
USA News, I'm Corey Myers. The 45th president of the United States expected to be booked into the Fulton County, Georgia jail today. Donald Trump reiterated his plans to turn himself over on criminal charges, saying on his social media site yesterday that he's proudly surrendering this afternoon. He faces racketeering and a dozen other counts connected to interference in the 2020 Georgia election. All eight candidates in last night's GOP presidential debate are vowing to reverse Bidenomics in the U.S., Florida Governor Ron DeSantis.
We must reverse Bidenomics so that middle-class families have a chance to succeed again. We cannot succeed as a country if you are working hard and you can't afford groceries, a car, or a new home, while Hunter Biden can make hundreds of thousands of dollars on lousy paintings.
A man who opened fire on Pittsburgh police dead following an hours-long standoff and an extremely active shooting situation. The shooting started Wednesday morning after deputies tried to serve an eviction notice to a man in Pittsburgh's Garfield neighborhood. That incident turned into a barricade situation for several hours until the suspect was killed. The fate of the so-called Texas floating border wall is now in the hands of a federal judge. The system of buoys is being blasted by critics who call it a political stunt. The former head of Customs and Border Protection says this lawsuit brought by the Justice Department might be the tipping point in the fight between Texas and the federal government. China banning all seafood imports from Japan after Tokyo started releasing treated radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean. China says the seafood ban is to protect customers from what it called Japan's selfish and irresponsible act. This is USA News.
To your left, our new exhibit, Monarchs of Springfield. And right here, we have our empty tour guide stand.
The last time Bryn hired someone is ancient history.
Sir, excuse me, that's not part of the exhibit.
They need tour guides who know the museum ropes.
Hey, kid, you like wearing khakis? I got a job for you.
Indeed can help them hire great people fast.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. You can schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from your employer dashboard. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get $75 towards your first sponsored job. Terms and conditions apply.
The extracurricular activities. The traffic. The nightly homework. The traffic. The finding time to eat dinner together as a family. The traffic. Back to school can be stressful. Thanks to Ziploc, meal prep doesn't have to be. New Ziploc bags with Stay Open design have a patented stand-up bottom that helps keep the bag upright and a top crease that folds and holds for easy filling, unlocking a second set of hands in the kitchen. If only it unlocked a second set of lanes. New Ziploc brand freezer and storage bags with Stay Open design from S.C. Johnson, a family company.
With news the networks refuse to use, you are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, Pete Sepp with me, National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. At the bottom of the hour, they had Ron DeSantis saying, hey, we've got to reverse Bidenomics. Reverse Bidenomics. I agree with him, and I think he's done a lot of good to do so compared to many of the other candidates on the stage. But NTU.org has a breakdown on their scorecards of how they actually voted. We can't get all of them because Vivek is not a politician. Donald Trump wasn't there. But we can kind of gauge his record at least to some degree. What say ye about the candidates and their genuineness regarding economics? Pete?
Yes, this is NTU's annual rating of Congress based on every single roll call vote in Congress affecting taxpayers. This is taxes, spending, debt, regulation. We've done this scorecard now for over 40 years, and it is the most comprehensive picture of a member of Congress's voting record on fiscal issues. So let's start, for example, with Asa Hutchinson. He was actually in Congress for 5 years. He tended to score between 50 and 63% on our rating, all roll call votes affecting fiscal policy. We grade on a curve. He tended to earn B's and C's during his career in Congress. So, you know, middle of the pack, especially among Republicans. If you take a look at Ron DeSantis, he had several years in Congress, 6 years, in fact. He has 4 A's, a B plus, and a B to his credit. He scored as low as 68% on our rating, as high as 90%. That's a little better record than Asa Hutchinson, for sure. Mike Pence had a very long record in Congress. And when he mentioned that he had a very conservative record on fiscal policy, well, our rating system tends to bear that out. He has a total of 7 A grades, 3 B pluses, and a B on our rating scale. He scored as high as a 92% and as low as a 59, but he won our Taxpayers Friend Award for his voting record on several occasions while he was in Congress. Tim Scott, the U.S. Senator, he's also been in both the Senate and the House, and has a fair share of A's to his credit, 4 A grades. I see a 3 B pluses, a C plus, and a C. He scored as low as a 43%, not fantastic, but as high as a 95%, which is quite good. So you see there's a range of grades and scores in Congress from which you can evaluate some of the records that the candidates are touting on stage in these debates.
Setting aside the debate, setting aside Ron Paul's comments, setting aside the credit rating meltdown, set aside the countries going against the United States and saying they want their own currency, set aside everything for a second and tell me what we the people can focus on the most that'll have the biggest impact to make a difference to economically improve our situations as we the people. Pete, your thoughts?
Well, I think it can start on the local and state level to begin with. The fact is lots of things Washington, D.C. does can affect you. But then again, so can your local and state governments. And people are changing the way those governments operate every day, using ballot measures, holding their elected officials accountable when the school board wants to increase its budget by 15 or 20% with no justification. That kind of citizen activism by starting or joining a state or local taxpayer group is very important. I also think that asking the candidates themselves very detailed and intelligent questions, insisting that they give specifics on, for example, will they renew all or some of the portions of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 on the federal level? What would they do differently from the Fiscal Responsibility Act, the debt ceiling deal that recently passed? How much further would they go to reduce our federal debt? What are they going to do about entitlement programs, the big elephant in the room that hardly anyone wants to acknowledge in Congress or on the presidential campaign trail? You know, these are no longer the kinds of issues that were fun for walks to debate when Ross Perot was running for president back in 1992. These are all the most urgent issues in my lifetime or your lifetime, Sam, and especially in our kids' lifetimes. I mean, these are no longer things that we can afford to simply say, well, we'll deal with it next year. Next year is here.
Pete, we sure appreciate all you do, sir. Thank you so much. I know you're busy as could be, but you've always taken time over the last 25 plus years to really spend time with us and really provide think tank intelligence that can be brought to the table, setting aside partisan politics and truly saying, all right, what's good for we the people? What's good for the taxpayer? How do we make a difference in a meaningful way to lower taxes, but to pay for the proper role of limited constitutional government? How do we navigate these complicated factions everywhere and bring people together in meaningful ways? That matters, Pete, and we appreciate all that you do and tell your staff thank you, sir.
Always a pleasure, Sam. I look forward to talking again soon.
There he goes, Pete Sepp, NTU.org, ladies and gentlemen. Again, they partner on the national level all the way down to your local level. ladies and gentlemen, with you to bring research and information, to bring what's working in other places to a theater near you, so to speak. You know what? They have examples. What do you want to do? You want to work on something? Well, they've got an example somewhere else where they've been successful. Here's what they've done in other areas, and here's what you can do. And they bring all that reality check to you in meaningful, productive ways. They don't care, you know what, where you sit in terms of, you know, politics or partisanship or any of that stuff. They set all that aside, and I commend them for it because that's how we get things done. Ladies and gentlemen, they all attacked Vivek Ramaswamy, claiming that he has no experience. And in my opinion, ladies and gentlemen, all that means is they're out of ammunition. They're out of talking points. All right. Nikki Haley, for example, lost her cool. You could tell she kind of lost it. Nikki to Vivek, you have no foreign policy experience and it shows. Well, so let me get this right. Every candidate almost attacked Vivek saying he doesn't have experience. But what do you want to compare that to? Think of the state of the country, the state of the affairs of the country. All these people there that have all been politicians forever, their experiences ran us into a buzzsaw in America. We are melting down. So if that's what experience gets you, I don't want any part of it. Nikki Haley says, you don't have any foreign policy experience. Well, look where we are at foreign policy, Nikki. You're literally spending millions and millions and million, billions of dollars on the military-industrial complex. We're in over 130 nations, militarily speaking. War's about to break out. China and Russia are about to get together in a cabal against us, teaming up with North Korea. I mean, this is insanity. And you want to just say, oh, Vivek's ideas because he disagrees with you, he has no experience? Well, what kind of experience do you have to have, and where has that got us? Shame on Nikki. Again, you claim that when you're out of argument. Oh, you have no experience. Pence blaming Vivek. Say, hey, you're too young. You're the youngest guy in the room. Oh, you're just like ChatGPT. You don't even know. Every one of those folks are literally out of arguments, and the proof is in the pudding. When you use that hominin attacks, they attack Vivek wrongfully. So he says this, I'm the only person on the stage that is not bought and paid for. I can say this, climate change is a hoax. Yeah. The climate change is a hoax. He's right about that. Now, Ramaswamy did very well, takes center stage, does a phenomenal job. Interestingly enough, Ron DeSantis kind of hung back. He didn't really do very much on the stage, folks. Now, I'm not downing him. I think he's better off than most on the stage. Ron DeSantis did a pretty good job, but he stuck pretty much to his record and to very peaceful general talking points. He didn't mix it up with anybody. They literally pointed all their attacks at Ramaswamy and didn't point at Ron DeSantis, which I find kind of interesting. Ron DeSantis, in my personal opinion, will slide in the polls, and Vivek will go up in the polls big time as a result on the hands down. Vivek Ramaswamy won the debate. Nikki was a distant second, ladies and gentlemen. The candidates frequently sparred with entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy. He painted himself as the young anti-establishment choice. Can you skip the break? The young anti-establishment choice? Anyway, I guess Mike Pence and Nikki Haley kind of came out and were really getting into it. But the problem is Mike just appeared like an old man. And Nikki Haley, the only woman on the stage, in my opinion, was kind of a disaster. Okay? And let me explain what I mean by that. Shame on Nikki. She said this. If you want to talk, ask a man. If you want to get anything done, ask a woman. Now, the reason that I bring that up is because Christie and Pence literally just sounded like a bunch of old, grumpy old men. So on one hand, she was right to say it because she was making a point, but she's wrong to say it because what if Vivek Ramaswamy got up there and he said, hey, Nikki, if you want to, you know, ask a, if you want to just talk or get nothing done, ask a woman. If you want to get something done, ask a man. the whole world would be absolutely beside themselves going, how dare you say that about a woman? He's a chauvinist pig. But somehow, if you're a woman, you can say that like Margaret Thatcher, and you're lauded and promoted, and that was an awesome thing to say. And no, shame on you, Nikki. How dare you? As Vivek wisely pointed out, reverse racism is racism. Well, the same thing is true. Reverse genderism is chauvinistic. So now that it's the day of the woman, are we going to be chauvinistic women that shut down men? See, in society right now, men, or white men especially, dads, whatever you want to say, they're all in bad shape. Everything seems to be against them. Is that right? And Nikki helped further that cause, and shame on her for doing so. The debate was moderated by Fox News, Brett Baer and Martha McCallum. They focused on a ton of topics, ladies and gentlemen, some worthy, some not worthy. The economy, I've been over that a lot. Climate change, I've been over that. Abortion, Nikki Haley and Mike Pence stood up the tallest on pro-life, and I commend them for it. They didn't really let Vivek speak out much about it, but as far as I understand, he's personally pro-life, but he doesn't believe we ought to have a federal mandate or a law. They talked about COVID-19 lockdowns. Vivek was the only one to double down and say they're completely bogus and need to stop. Everybody else kind of waffled. Gun control. The right to keep and bear arms is critical. Nobody stood up tall enough on that, in my humble opinion. Trump's upcoming trials. Ukraine funding. Vivek was the only one that said, I would not increase funding for the Ukraine. Everybody else was like, oh, yeah, we got to promote the military-industrial complex. And then they ripped on Vivek saying he didn't have experience. And my response is, what about a foreign humble policy that George Washington had, that Ron Paul advocated for, that the Republicans used to be for? That's what Vivek was calling for. They talked about the southern border. The only one that would absolutely shut it down in bold fashion would be Vivek. Everybody else kind of, they talked about it, but not really. Education, Vivek said he'd shut down the education department. So did a couple of the other presidential hopefuls. But they talked about presidential age. That's where they mocked Vivek for being too young, but shame on those old men. They even brought up UFOs. And I don't mean to be crass about this, but look, debating UFOs now is a waste of time. We've got all of these other issues to talk about. Now, listen, there were several other issues that I find fascinating. Trump, the leading candidate in primary polls, chose to skip out on the debate, and he sat down with the debate with Tucker Carlson instead, and he eclipsed the whole debate. I kid you not. They literally skipped out on the debate, and people absolutely loved it. More support for Donald Trump during his interview with Tucker Carlson than anyone. President Trump blasted the indictments against them, calling them ridiculous. Nonsense. Anyway, it was pretty amazing how many people watched Donald Trump. And there was five highlights primarily from Tucker Carlson, Donald Trump's sit down. They say you have great people that are Democrats, Donald says. But I've seen what they do. Fox made a dumb move to dump Tucker Carlson. Well, by Donald skipping the debates and by Tucker Carlson not being on Fox, they literally handed their heads to them in terms of ratings. Fox relentlessly spent time promoting, listen to this, their phone apps and podcasting. I found that interesting. Fox News relentlessly promoted everything but radio. It's interesting. Radio stations, you ought to beware of Fox. They want to literally cut you out of the deal, okay? AM and FM radio stations. I love you and support you in every way that I possibly can. I know I got podcasts and things too, but I don't have any other way to get my word out. If more radio stations would take me, that'd be great. But I bring this up because Fox News is literally promoting podcasting big time and not their traditional news, traditional radio, traditional venues. That just shows how podcasting has taken the world by storm. Shame on Fox News also. They called it Democracy 2024. I hate to break this to the Fox team, but you know what? We don't have democracy in America. We have a constitutional republic, actually 50 of them, called the United States, bound together by contract. Constitutional contract. There are state contracts called the state constitutions, and there's a general contract, the general constitution. The United States is a plural term. We don't have democracy 2024. Shame on you for even suggesting such. It just shows how ignorant you are at the table. Now, Mr. Scott did a good job lamenting what he called the weaponization of the Department of Justice. He said he would fire Attorney General Merrick Garland and FBI Director Christopher Wray. Good for him for saying that. But Ramaswamy is ready to get rid of 75% of the government employee count. I like that a lot better. So Tim is on the right track. But Governor DeSantis called for the end of the weaponization of government. I agree with Ron on that, too. But again, the only one going far enough to make a difference. And Vivek pointed this out. Everybody else wants to just kind of play around the edges and talk about the change. He's ready to get it done. Literally, it was the Ramaswamy show. 6 months ago, ladies and gentlemen, the idea that Ramaswamy would even be on the stage and be standing center stage would have been laughable. But there he was, leaning into the fact and taking them all on like nobody's business. Now, I find it funny that Chris Christie called Ramaswamy an amateur. An amateur at what? The guy's an attorney. The guy's an incredible debater. The guy's a billionaire. The guy relates to immigrant parents. He's a first-generation American. How is he an amateur? An amateur at what? Running government? Well, for you folks that aren't amateurs, you've sure done a horrible job. That's what's got us into this mess. Anyway, they say that Ramaswamy is like Donald Trump in terms of substance and style. He stirred up a ton of controversy and everything else. They're downing him for that. They're basically saying, well, if you're so like Trump, why even run? Why not just have Trump? Well, my response is all the other candidates are just alike. They all want to promote the general Republican old guard school. Now, I find this whole thing fascinating. I just find it fascinating. Anyway, I support the pro-life stance of most of the candidates. Most seem to want nothing to do with the question of human behavior. Literally, they believe human behavior was causing climate change. Nobody really wanted that question. Nobody wanted to deal with it except for Vivek. He said it's totally bogus. It's a hoax. Mr. Pence was belligerent, sounded like an old man, and had to be repeated over and over and over. Stop, stop. Brett Baer, one of the moderators, had to repeatedly tell Pence, you got to stick to the time limits, sir, as if Pence was just too derelict to even realize there's a time clock and he's not the only one on the stage. An overwhelming majority of Americans absolutely support the tearing up of regulations to boost domestic energy production. I found that fascinating because it just shows Vivek has tapped into what the American people think like nobody's business. The candidates, except for Ramaswamy, took the view that former Vice President Mike Pence did the right thing. Okay? They basically said, hey, Pence did the right thing by rejecting the Donald. I don't see it that way. I think Vivek is right. You cannot weaponize the government against Donald Trump. That's what they've done. And Ramaswamy's not saying that Trump's squeaky clean. What he's saying is you cannot weaponize government. We've got to set this aside and get a handle on weaponized government and stop that. Okay? The bottom line is, look, people are sick of it. Vice President Pence, I don't think, did the right thing. They want you to believe it's either you go with Donald Trump and you just deny the election results, or you go with Mike Pence and you deny Congress looking into it. Neither are the truth. You know what? You can look into it and have Congress do so, and that's what Pence should have done. Pence should have said, hey, I'm going to demand Congress look at this. But he didn't. Shame on Pence. Pence pretends he's back in the Constitution. Donald says he's back in the Constitution. What's the truth? The truth is, constitutionally, Congress should have looked into election integrity issues, but they did not. Shame on them, and shame for Pence creating a faux argument to where Donald and Pence have two sides of the issue, neither are correct. Bottom line, did anyone move the needle? If so, who? My answer is a resounding two people moved the needle, in my opinion, in the debate. Vivek set the record straight and moved the needle big time. America didn't know him. Now they will. And especially when he's in more debates. Everybody hates Vivek, meaning all the deep state. But the people in Trump love him. All right? Bottom line, ladies and gentlemen, is Vivek Ramaswamy handed their heads to them. Nikki Haley was a distant second. Nikki did pretty well in foreign policy. Not that I agree with her on it, but she was very well spoken regarding it. And she did a close second. She was very real on abortion. Mike Pence took the most pro-life stance of anybody else. Nikki basically said, we don't have the support, so let's take a softer approach, but let's still stand for pro-life. There was some nuanced differences there that I don't think matter too much. I do think pro-life is one of the quintessential issues that we should and need to deal with in America. I don't believe we can let it go as we have. They want you to believe that the Democrats have shown that it's a losing issue. I disagree with that entirely. I absolutely disagree. Okay. So it was a very interesting event, but I think the two people that moved the needle was Nikki Haley and Vivek. Vivek more than the others by a long ways. With Donald Trump and Tucker Carlson sitting it out and mocking them, and with Ramaswamy taking the day, I'm telling you right now, it was a win for Donald and a win for Vivek big time. I don't think it was a win for really anybody else. Nikki looked a little bit better, but not enough to really move the needle. But Vivek Ramaswamy moved the needle, and so did Donald, because their ideas are catching on. What about a Donald Trump Vivek Ramaswamy ticket? I don't know if they'll ever do it, but it would sure be good if they would. Or even a Vivek Ramaswamy / RFK Jr. ticket. I don't support all these old men running, all these governors. You know, you say, well, you can't run without experience. Well, Donald Trump didn't have experience. He was one of the best presidents we've ever had. The best president in the 21st century. Vivek's right on that. Right? So I don't go for their experience clown claim anymore. It's a clown claim, folks. It's bogus. You got to have experience so you can run the country into the ground and have everybody beside themselves wondering what to do about it. And then we're going to say, if you have bold ideas, if you don't agree with us, then you don't have any experience, because we're out of ammunition to say anything else. Did anyone move the needle? I'm telling you right now, Vivek moved the needle. I'm telling you right now, he moved the needle. It was something to behold. For his first debate, the guy did incredible. We're going to watch him into the future. Now, there are concerns. He took money from George Soros to get his law degree. Many are going to criticize him for that. My response is he was young, and he took a scholarship from somebody related to Soros. I don't know that he really traced the dots as much as he just took a scholarship, which he's entitled to take. I don't know that I can hold him responsible for it necessarily. But if that's the least of the mistakes you've made, more power to you. We need somebody who can talk bold like Donald Trump, somebody who can talk bold like Vivek Ramaswamy. That is for sure. Then most importantly, we need somebody who can back up that talk with action, baby. We'll keep an eye on the ball just for you, because this is Liberty Roundtable Live. LovingLiberty.net. Spread the word. Shed the love. Tell the tale. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.